Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace, and it's time for another Valiant Sunday podcast. Before we get into the books I'm going to talk about in this episode, I just wanted to remind everybody about the Jeremy Dale Skyward Kickstarter going on right now for the omnibus that's going to contain issues 1 through 9, a bunch of original artwork, both from Jeremy and a lot of the artists he recruited to do covers for the series, as well as an issue 10. So it's a way to kind of resolve the incredible cliffhanger that issue 9 ended on, issue 9 of Skyward, and give some closure, not an ending, but just some closure to the story that's happened so far. So if you haven't listened to our Comic Source special podcast about Skyward, I'm going to play a little snippet for you here. And if you'd like to go back and listen to it and get a lot more details about the rewards and all that kind of stuff and why Jeremy's wife, Kelly, decided to do this, that episode is available on our website. So take a listen, and then we'll come back and talk about Bloodshot Salvation and Ninja K.
Well, you mentioned Skyward. I mentioned it as well. You know, I've talked about it on the other podcast, but maybe some of our listeners aren't that familiar. So why don't you tell them what Skyward's all about?
Sure. For those of you that don't know, Skyward is one of those all-ages light fantasy adventure about a boy and his dog that need to unite the entire world against the dark army of the Brother Kings. If you like things like Legends of Zelda or like Lord of the Rings, it's right up your alley. This is a little less like adult than something like Game of Thrones.
Why don't you let us know what this Kickstarter that you have going, and there will be a link in the show notes and all this information, everyone, so don't worry. But why don't you tell us, Kelly, what the Kickstarter is actually going to be funding?
Okay, so because we're talking Skyward, Jeremy created Skyward to be an ongoing series. I mean, he had this sucker planned out until at least issue 50. And it kind of saddens me that you guys don't get to see what his grand idea was. But he left issue 9 on such a cliffhanger that I felt like it was my responsibility as his good wife, as well as a fan of Skyward, to at least bring out an issue 10. So that way it will give us all a little bit of closure. Now, it doesn't actually end the series. So in your imagination, you can keep it going. And if I ever decide to do anything with it later in maybe another medium, then I can. But this will give all the fans a little bit of closure. So issue 10 is going to be a 32-page issue. I took Jeremy's ideas for issue 10, and I went to our friend Barbara Kessel, the comic writer and editor, and she actually developed a script that works. And then Shannon Gallant, amazing man that he is, also a G.I. Joe artist, drew the entire issue. And now it's at the colors with Catherine Leno and Laura Martin. And what I decided to do was, I don't want there just to be an issue 10 and that's it. So I did a Kickstarter for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. So that Omnibus is going to cover issues 1 through 9, plus you'll get issue 10 in there. And you're going to get all of the variant cover arts by all the different artists Jeremy had, such as Phil Noto, Darwin Cook, Stefan Rue, Tom Zoller, Mike Norton, David Peterson. I mean, it's a huge list.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about kind of the business end of Kickstarter, because I know people sometimes don't realize the way that it works. And, you know, even though it's only been a week or so and it's already at 57%, I know a lot of times there's a lot of excitement early on and you know, it gets to 80 or 90% and it kind of dies out. So if you're planning on pledging, do it sooner than later, because it doesn't get produced unless it gets to 100%. So,
yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because some people don't realize when it comes to Kickstarter, you can pledge whatever you want. Like, you can do an incentive. Your card, your credit card, is not charged until we hit our end date, which is March 8th. And if we hit the 100%, if we hit that $20,000 or we're above it. So if you're thinking about well, I would really like to donate or do an incentive, but I don't get paid until next week, that's fine. Just go ahead and grab the incentive, especially if it's one of the ones that there's only one of. Grab it now. You're not going to actually be charged until March 8th.
Yeah, and it's so easy. We're all so busy. It's so easy to forget. So do it. Open another tab right now while you're listening to this, or if you're in the car, you know, as soon as you get where you're going, as soon as you finish listening to the podcast. Yeah. Don't get on your phone while you're driving, but yeah, do it sooner than later, because it's really easy to forget. So,
And truthfully, the reception has been amazing so far, and the outpouring of love and support has been amazing. But until we hit this 20,000, even though I'm very confident that we will, I'm gonna still be like a little anxious and freaking out. So please don't let Kelly freak out.
All right, everybody, hope you take advantage of the opportunity to go and pledge for that Kickstarter. Like I said, I think it's going to be an amazing hardcover to have in your collection. So now on to the books I'm going to talk about for this Valiant Sunday podcast. I'm going to get you caught up with Bloodshot Salvation and also Ninja K this coming Wednesday. It's actually Valentine's Day, February 14th. We're going to have Ninja K issue 4 come out, as well as Bloodshot Salvation number 6. So I'm going to talk briefly about those, but I'm not going to get too spoilery because I know you all want to read them for yourselves. But I also want to kind of flash back and get everyone caught up with these two series so you know what's going on so far. So before I do that, let me kind of give a creative rundown for the series so far, starting with Bloodshot Salvation. It's written by Jeff Lemire, and we've had art from, for the most part, pencils and inks by Louis LaRosa and Miko Suyan, and we've had colors from Brian Ribert and Diego Rodriguez. So in issue 1 of Bloodshot Salvation, we actually kind of move forward in time. Well, first of all, I should say that Bloodshot Salvation is actually two storylines that Jeff Lemire is telling concurrently. One is in the future, and those are always prefaced by the word soon. So setting, and then soon, and then when it switches to the storyline that's happening in current day, it'll give setting and it'll say now. And both these storylines, as I said, are running concurrently in the book, but clearly one is in the future, an undetermined time in the future, as indicated by just the generic soon, and the other one is supposed to be happening in present day. So in the future storyline in Bloodshot Salvation number 1, we see that Bloodshot and Magic's daughter is looks to be about 10 or 11. So she's grown somewhat. She still has the pale skin and the red eyes. You know, she's not fully grown. She doesn't seem to necessarily exhibit as much power, strength, fighting ability as Bloodshot. I mean, obviously she's still just a child. So the story opens up. She's actually attacked by some men out in the wilderness in the snow, and Magic comes and helps save her. And Magic actually acquits herself pretty well. Magic does make a comment that's kind of foreboding. She's at one point, Jesse, Bloodshot and Magic's daughter, says she wishes her daddy were there. And Magic's response is, I wish he was here too, but we're never going to see him again. So again, it's kind of ominous and you're not really sure what to think. You know, we don't clearly know what happened in the ensuing years. In the current storyline that runs concurrently in issue 1, we see that Ray comes home from buying groceries. He overhears Magic on the phone, clearly having an unpleasant conversation with someone. Come to find out, it's Magic's father, or daddy, as she calls him, who's been harassing him for a long time. Apparently, he's really not a very nice person and is threatening Magic, and Ray Garrison, Bloodshot, doesn't take that very well. The other thread that's running through the books is Omen, which is kind of the remnants of Project Rising Spirit kind of rising up, the few that are left, the few men in power. And there seems to be a man, Pete is his name, who is in charge of all. So they're getting, in issue 1, they're kind of getting all their ducks in a row, so to speak. So Magic goes to take a nap, Bloodshot can't leave well enough alone. He gets Magic's cell phone. He calls the number. He talks to this daddy person. This person threatens Magic. Ray's not going to let that stand. Magic finds out that Ray called. She's upset. She makes Ray Garrison and Bloodshot promise that he won't go after Daddy. They'll just leave it in the past and they'll be a family. But Ray, even though he promises, he doesn't seem to be able to let it go. Meanwhile, in the future storyline, we see that Jesse and Magic have left. They're traveling in a pickup truck when it's attacked by a man that looks like Bloodshot, actually, but he has long hair and his skin's black instead of white, but he still has the red tattoo. And that's the end of issue one. So moving on to issue two, it picks right up where issue one left off, with this Rampage character trying basically kidnapping Jesse as much as she tries to stop him. And we see Magic crawls out of the wreckage as well. And then just about as Rampage is about to pummel Magic and Jesse, he gets hit by a van, and it's the other Bloodshots from Bloodshot Island that show up and rescue Jesse and Magic. And they say, Ray sent us. And Magic responds, but Ray is dead. And they say, I know. And then it switches back to the current storyline, or the storyline that happens in modern day. Ray's sitting in Jesse's room watching her, talking himself into basically leaving them because he sees that there's 9 missed calls from this daddy person on Magic's phone, and he can't leave well enough alone. He wants them to be safe. He wants them to be a family. So he leaves a note on the fridge, leaves the house, and heads for where he thinks Daddy is going to be. The scene next switches to Pete, and he's serving someone food in a basement. He lives on a farm, kind of seems to be out in the middle of nowhere, but he's telling this person in the basement that he's got to go. Meanwhile, Magic wakes up because Jesse's crying. Jesse's running a huge fever. She's freaking out, yelling and screaming for Ray. Ray's clearly not there. Magic finds the note, and she is not happy, to say the least. Meanwhile, Ray arrives at the compound that Daddy seems to run, and he's this, you know, there's a bunch, just a bunch of trailers, look like old trailers and boxcars, bunch of rednecks in beards and flannel shirts, cut off shorts. They look like militia, really, to be honest. And Daddy's this scraggly old man in dirty overalls with little girls around him, and he just gives you a really creepy vibe. Meanwhile, Magic shows up at the hospital with Jesse, and as she takes Jesse to the emergency room, and they look at her, we see that her skin has turned pale, her eyes are now don't have any pupils and have turned red, and she's got the red tattoo or mark in the middle of her chest. So moving on to issue three, it starts with Magic talking to the other Bloodshots after they've been rescued from Rampage, and Magic's trying to get answers like, how did Ray send you to rescue me, and Jesse, if Ray's dead? And they're like, well, it'd be easier if we just show you. They take her to this mansion. There's a barn in the back, and there they meet Punk Mambo, and Punk Mambo basically channels Ray, and Ray's able to talk through Punk Mambo, and Ray's apparently, Bloodshot is not apparently dead. He's in the future. He's in the year 4002, and that's all the information we get. And then the story switches back to now, the present day storyline, and Ray is confronting Daddy. He flips over into turning himself into Bloodshot, starts attacking all the guards, and then we move to Jesse and Magic in the hospital, and nobody's quite sure what's going on, and Magic thinks that it was a mistake to go there and decides to leave, but the doctors and nurses don't want her to. They say, you can't just leave, there's something wrong with your baby, call security. And Magic runs outside anyway, and she tries to call Ray. Ray doesn't answer, so she actually calls another number that she said she's only supposed to call if it's an emergency, and she's actually calling Ninjak for help. Then we switch to New Mexico in the current day, and we see that Pete has arrived at what's left of Project Rising Spirit's resources, basically. It's underground base. They're calling it Project Omen. And Pete wants an update on all nanite technology, what's currently out there. Moving back to Ohio, we see Bloodshot is still fighting with the troops of Daddy. Seems to be doing well. Pretty much Bloodshot against a normal man isn't very fair. So, of course, he's winning. And finally, it seems like he's broken through all the soldiers and he has Daddy by the throat holding him up and he says it's over. Meanwhile, over at Project Omen, the scientists are telling Pete that all the nanite technology has been shut down and accounted for except for the live agents. And Pete says, live agents? He said, yes, sir, Project Bloodshot's still alive. He was given clemency after his actions to stop the crisis in Manhattan. And that doesn't sit well with Pete. He says, just shut him down. And so, of course, it's, you know, unbeknownst to them, it's about the worst time. And all of a sudden, as Bloodshot is surrounded in this enemy camp, he loses his powers. He's back to being completely human. And they pretty much start beating the crap out of him. So then we move to issue 4. Issue 4 is kind of a break in the action, if you will. It's the origin of Rampage. And it's set in Ohio some years ago. And turns out this is where that farm was. And we see Pete as a young boy. And he has a brother, Danny. So their father is an abusive alcoholic. Pete's the older brother. Danny's the younger, even though Danny is quite a bit bigger than Pete. And Danny seems to be a little clumsy, and he's always getting in trouble. And then he suffers beatings at the hands of his father. And we kind of learn through the, as the story goes on, that you get the impression that Pete and Danny's mother died giving birth to Danny because he was too big, so to speak. So one night after a particularly vicious beating, Pete decides that it's enough and he goes down to visit Danny in the basement where his father always sends him. And he says to the, Pete says to Danny, no matter what happens, just stay down here and I'm going to fix things. So in the middle of the night, Pete's father awakens to the barn being on fire and he runs out there with a couple of buckets. Pete's waiting there to ambush him with a shovel. And Pete whacks his dad with a shovel, but doesn't knock his dad out. His dad grabs him, throws him into the flames, and Danny shows up, even though Pete had told him to stay in the basement, throws a bucket of water on Pete's face to put out the flames that were kind of burning on his neck and lower face, and then turns and whacks his father in the face with the bucket and then uses the shovel to beat him until he's dead, and then scoops up Pete and takes him out of the barn. And we see the scars on Pete's face that we've seen in the elder Pete. And then, in fact, it switches to a picture of the, or a drawing of the elder Pete. It says, Ohio some years later. It's Pete. He's sitting at his table waiting for the helicopter from Project Omen to arrive. Goes downstairs, and we know he had told his brother he was leaving. And he says, he goes down there again, tells his brother, Danny, that he's leaving again, but that actually he wants him to come with him. And Danny doesn't like that. He says he doesn't like going anywhere. It's safer if he just stays downstairs so the bad stuff won't happen. Clearly, Danny's is feeling guilty over what happened the last time he left the basement, which, you know, was many, many, many years before. But he did save his brother's life. And there's clearly devotion between the two brothers. So Pete says, you know, I hope you'll forgive me doing what I have to do. And he shoots him with a couple of tranquilizers. And then they take him out to the helicopter. And one of the men from Project Omen hands Pete a file folder that says Project Rampage Confidential. So it seems clear that Pete had his brother injected with nanites. And that's how this Rampage character that's hunting Jesse and magic in the future storyline was created. So moving on to issue 5, it's back to the main two storylines. Issue opens up with Punk Mambo still channeling Bloodshot's voice from 4002 and magic trying to get answers. And then Punk Mambo suddenly says, "Something's coming, I need to," and he's gone. And Magic says, "Gone, that's it?" And Punk Mambo replies, "Look, I did my best, I'm not a cell phone." Meanwhile, Jesse's waking up, and they're trying to decide what they should do when the barn explodes. And as Jesse climbs out of the wreckage, there's a Rampage with a, holding a rocket launcher that he used to destroy the barn. Then we switch back to the present day storyline with Ray, who looks pretty beat up, chained to a wall, and Daddy's saying that, he should have known better than to come there. And the devil that was in Ray is clearly gone, you know, referring to his powers as Bloodshot. So the men start beating on Ray, and then we switch to Omen headquarters, and they're telling Pete that the rogue nanites have all been rendered inert. And then Pete responds that they'll have to see about bringing Bloodshot and all the other inactive nanite agents in and disposing of them, powered up or not. He doesn't want them hanging out there. And he also hears that his brother is responding very well to the gene therapy and the injections. His brain activity has leaped dramatically over the last 2 days. There's no doubt Project Rampage is working. Then someone comes running up and says that they have a new nanite signature that just popped back up. And Pete doesn't understand how that can be because he thought that they were in control of all the nanites. And the tech tells him that it's not Bloodshot or any of the old nanite powered operatives. It's a new signature. So clearly they're picking up on Jesse, the baby. And after calling Ninjak, Gate has actually stepped in to try to help Jesse and Magic. They take Jesse to a Gate facility where doctors are working to try to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, Ninjak says that he'll find Ray. He has a pretty good idea. And Jesse actually says, I'm sorry, Magic actually says, "I have a pretty good idea where he is, Ninjak." Then we switch back to the compound of Daddy, where Ray's still getting the crap beat out of him. Ninjak shows up, cuts Ray free, and even though Ray doesn't have the powers of Bloodshot, he takes a sword from Ninjak and says he'll handle Daddy, and he kills Daddy himself. And he comments that it's the first time he's killed somebody as Ray without the Bloodshot powers, and he expected to feel relief or vindication when Daddy was finally dead, but instead he feels nothing. And that's when Ninjak informs him that you really messed up, Ray. You have no idea how much your baby may be about to die. And that's the end of book one. Or issue five, which will be the first trade paperback. So they're calling it book one. And as I mentioned, six comes out this Wednesday, February 14th. It's a really good issue. I'm not going to go too into detail, but what I will say is that, well, first of all, let me say who the creative group is, because we've had some changes here. It's written by Jeff Lemire, and all the art is by Renato Guedes, and he's handling, you know, pencils, inks, colors, everything. So his art's not as clean as Luis Larosa or Miko Suyan, but I know it can be cleaner than he. Like, this is a different style. This is a little more almost watercolor looking than his art's been before. So it's not quite as clean. So I don't really prefer that. I mean, this is a lot rougher, a lot more moody. And I just don't. I mean, I think of Bloodshot more as a sci-fi book. His powers, you know, are scientific in nature. So I think of it that way a little more. He's giving this more of a almost a horror look. I just didn't necessarily. I don't know, I didn't like it. But it does open up with Rampage having captured Jesse and flying her off in a helicopter. And then the rest of the book is pretty much devoted to the storyline that happens in the current day with Gate trying to save baby Jesse and coming up short. And then Ninjak basically gives them another alternative, which is going to be very dangerous. And we don't know exactly what it is, but it does involve leaving kind of our plane, if you will, leaving our plane of existence. So that's all I'm going to say about it, because as I said, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I am very anxious to see where it goes from here. I think Bloodshot Salvation has been a great story so far. What Lemire's done by telling these two storylines concurrently is really heightened the expectation and the anticipation, because we see where all the characters are in the future storyline, and we see where they are in the present storyline, and you want to know what happens in the future storyline. You want to know what happens in the present storyline, but you also want to know what happens that changes everything so dramatically from kind of the players and where they are in the setting in the present day versus where they're at in the future. I mean, it is a pretty big time span. You know, it's probably 9-10 years at least. So there's a lot of time, you know, to move the pieces around and figure out exactly how all the players got to where they are in the future, but it's still an intriguing idea. So Bloodshot's been a really, really good story so far, and I hope that continues. All right, now I'm going to talk about Ninja K. I'll start with number one, written by Christos Gage, pencils and inks by Thomas Giorello, and colors by Diego Rodriguez. So this book actually starts out, and it's Christos Gage expanding upon that idea that Matt Kent first introduced, that it's not actually Ninjak, it's Ninja K, and that K being a designation that he's the 11th ninja in the service of MI6, the first being Ninja A. So issue one starts out, and it's basically telling that story, the history of the ninja program in MI6. From the first ninja who was on loan to them from Japan that was just called ninja at first, and then eventually when they decided that they needed to start training someone themselves, then that ninja became Ninja B, and the first ninja was redesignated Ninja A. So the first half of the book, as I mentioned, is devoted to telling that story, and then we meet Ninja D, who actually knows Ninjak, the ninja that we know. And he seems to be a right jolly old fellow. You know, he's kind of a Sean Connery type that's giving Ninjak advice. Then we move to the present day. Ninjak's in Hong Kong. He's fighting. He's doing his, you know, regular Ninjak kind of stuff, and rescues a boy that's been kidnapped and held for ransom. And this is a mission that he's doing that's actually not for MI6, because he does take other missions. You know, he is for hire, as it were. And he gets a call from Livewire saying she's going to be in London, and they want to meet up. And they do, and they, you know, there's some kind of a relationship going on between the two. They serve together in unity. There's clearly a physical relationship and also romantic feelings going on. But Livewire feels like Ninjak's a closed book to her. He never opens up to her, whereas he knows a lot about her. And when she gets mad and starts to storm out, he says, "You're right. You know, what do you want to know?" And it's not enough for her, because she says, "Even though you're offering to tell me anything, you've got a tortured look on your face when you do it." You know, and she says, I liked being with you because I thought we could make each other happy. And Colin responds, "You do make me happy." And Amanda Livewire says, "I'm glad, but I need the same from you." And she leaves. And she actually runs into Neville Alcott outside, who's going up to meet Ninjak. And he's there to tell him that Ninja D has been killed, and they want Ninjak to investigate and find out who killed him. So the way he's going to do that is he's going to talk to one of Ninja D's backups, basically part of Ninja D's support team, the one that's still alive. They have him under, MI6 has him under protective custody. So Ninjak heads out there to talk to him. This part of Ninja D's support staff says that he can think of a lot of enemies that would want Ninja D Dead, but none more so than Madame Charade, who was kind of a shapeshifter, and they seemed to be, they had a love-hate relationship. They were obsessed with each other. Thin line between love and hate never really existed for them. So they go through the history of that, and Ninjak still feels like there's something that he's not being told, and rather than tell, the old man just pulls a gun on Ninjak and tells him to get out. Meanwhile, someone is outside killing all the guards, sets off a bomb, and the issue ends with this person's house exploding. So moving on to issue two. So moving on to issue two, it actually starts by telling the story of Ninja C, starting back in 1952, telling about him trying to have relationships, trying to do his missions for MI6, but still have a regular life, and how he doesn't quite seem to fit in. And the story switches to Ninjak in present day, and we see that he survived the explosion by triggering his armor, basically his heavier armor. He doesn't have a lot of air, he says, but he's got enough in the armor to be able to dig himself out. So then he reports in that D3, Ninja D's third support staff, is dead, as well as the guards. But he has a location on Madame Charade, and he goes to visit her. After fighting with her for a very short period of time, it's very clear that she didn't have anything to do with the death. She's so old and frail now that she can't even hold her shape very long, because she tries to appear as a youthful woman at first. As Ninja starts to talk to her, Ninjak starts to talk to her, and then says, "Your face is melting," because she can't even hold the image. And she actually attacks Ninjak, hoping that he'll kill her, but he knows what she's up to, basically, and says, "I'm leaving you alive in case I need more information from you." But what he does find out is that Ninja D worked out of a building in Birmingham, facility in Birmingham, after he retired, and that's where Ninjax goes next to try to get some information. Once he arrives, he finds what looks like a facility that's pretty much torn apart. It looks like there were kids that were there, but he's not 100% sure what was going on there. And as he's searching, he gets attacked, and it turns out it's Ninja C who's there. We don't know for what reason. So issue three starts out with Ninjak and Ninja C fighting. And Ninja C seems to be fighting reluctantly. He keeps trying to talk to Ninjak and tell him that he doesn't understand what's going on. He needs to listen to what Ninja C has to say. So finally, he convinces Ninjak that there is something going on, something called the Acclimation Bureau. And he tells Ninjak a story about how every time he thought he could find somebody to be in his life to make him happy and have some semblance of a normal life, they always disappeared, so that all that was left was the work. And he's saying that it was all the work of this Acclimation Bureau, this department within MI6, which was basically controlling their lives. So he talks about faking his death and having a wife and being happy for a time. But then when his wife dies of cancer, he started his investigation, because in all that time, he started thinking about all the coincidences, and it didn't make enough sense. It was too many coincidences, too many people vanishing for it to be simply, you know, him that was driving the people away. And that's when he discovered the Acclimation Bureau. And Ninjak's a little incredulous at first, doesn't necessarily believe it, but Ninja C tosses him a flash drive with some information on it, which he can access. And he takes a look at it, and he's just shocked by what he sees. Even though a lot of the documents are decades old, you can see on page 20, he's starting to put it together himself, starts thinking about all the things that have happened in his life, all the things that didn't necessarily make sense, or things that pushed him into becoming who he is, pushed him into becoming Ninjak. And you can see that he starts to believe. But he's not 100% there yet. He still wants to do some more investigation. So they agree to speak in 1 week and give Ninjak a chance to do further investigation. And I should also mention there are backup stories in these issues about Ninja, the very first Ninja A mission that I'm not talking about. But it's basically just a really simple mission he goes on, and one that's he succeeds in a way that no one else would have been able to. And at the very end in issue 4, just, you know, a tiny spoiler for issue 4 because I'm not going to go too in depth. But basically, because he succeeds at the end of issue 4, the backup story in issue 4, we see the moment when MI6 decides, man, this guy's awesome and we can't afford to lose him, but we know we will because he actually works for the Japanese and not us. So we need to have him, while he still is willing to help, train a Ninja B and start thinking long term about having a program. So in a way, it's a little bit of an origin story. So Ninjak 4 comes out this Wednesday, as I mentioned, Valentine's Day, November 14th. And it actually tells the story of Ninja G, who was the first both African-American and first female ninja. So she's, as you can imagine, a very interesting character. But Ninjak tracked her down to see if she knows anything about the Acclimation Bureau. And she tells him a story, kind of her story, her origin story, and the things that she found. And it leads Ninjak to, it kind of confirms what Ninja C said and leads him to, I imagine, seek out Ninja C again. And they'll be meeting. I really can't say much more than that without spoiling the details of the story. It's a great story. I will say that Juan Jose Reap on art, which is really, really awesome. Still Christos Gage writing, of course. And we also have Andrew Dalhouse on colors. So I'm really looking forward to the conclusion of the story arc. It says to be concluded next issue. So that's issue 5, which kind of surprised me. It seems like they could go longer with this story. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. I really like this mythos that the Valiant creative teams are creating with Ninjak, giving it more of a legacy feel, you know, opening up these different storylines. They can go back and tell stories about Ninja A, Ninja B, C, D, all the way up through Ninjak that we have now. Like I said, it really gives it a sense of legacy, really allows it to grow organically. And the way they've almost painted MI6 as the bad guy in this opening arc is really interesting as well. Maybe we'll see Ninjak even, I mean, he's a freelance. He has the illusion of being freelance, as Ninja C would say, but he's never far from MI6, right? As soon as they call, he comes running. So it'd be interesting to see after this arc's over if that kind of changes, because that's always been part of the character. He's always been willing and able or actively working for the British government. So that could be something that we see change in the future. So that's going to do it for this episode of Valiant Sunday. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Please go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter to eavesdrop on our conversations with other comic creators. Also on Twitter. And if you do a search on Facebook or Instagram for The Comic Source, you'll find us there as well. All three of those places, I always post when new episodes come out, so be sure to check them out. And also, if you're following us on Twitter and Facebook, it's a good place to find our convention coverage. Also, don't forget about our exclusive podcast with LRM Online, the 9-panel grid that comes out every Tuesday. And while you're there, be sure and check out all the other pop culture coverage of comic book and science fiction movies, TV shows, video games, comic books, all that great stuff. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.